The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine, Friday the 24th of March, and you're very welcome along to the last show of the week. Plenty coming up between now and 12. To keep you informed and entertained, so hopefully you'll stick around. And for the next hour, we're going to be joined by our Friday panel. We're going to go through some of the big stories that have been making the headlines overnight and throughout the course of the week. We want you involved in the conversation, of course. 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts to that number, 086 60 25000. Give us a call on 07491 25000, and don't forget you can watch the show, as you can every day, live by going on to Twitter, Facebook or YouTube on your smart device, your big screen TV, your Fire Stick, however you want to engage with us, and feel free to get involved and say hello there. Right, okay, let's say hello then to our Friday panel. Firstly, great to welcome back onto the show PRO of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital, Paddy Rooney. Good morning, Paddy.
Good morning, Greg.
Good to have you with us. Seamus McDade, Managing Director of McDade's Football Special. How are you getting on? Good to see you again, Seamus.
Good, Greg. Good morning.
And last but not least, we have Michael McLafferty, Independent Councillor here in County Donegal. Good morning to you, Michael. Thanks for joining us today.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, panel.
Right, that's okay. Right. Now, the big story of this week, and it has rumbled on for the last number of weeks, and will do so into next week, and that is the end of the no-fault eviction ban. The government survived a vote on it. They managed to buy, stroke, secure the support of enough independents and then won it comfortably, of course. But if you saw that 8 or 9 swing the other direction, it would have been much closer. But on paper, it seemed quite wide. They're going to face a vote of no confidence, the government, that is, I think, next week, brought through by Labour. Yesterday, Paddy, I'll start with you, if that's all right. Yesterday, you know, we spoke to a lady who is got an eviction notice, is facing eviction now. The landlord wants to do something else with the house. Family of four, parents, two children, one local house, 8 other families into it. So this isn't an urban problem. It's a small Irish town. At the same time, we also got contact from a landlord, an accidental landlord, you could say, and they are being taxed out of it. It's not a nice environment for them to operate, and they're thinking of exiting. So that's a rental property out of the market. I mean, is there a solution to this that would have been fair to all parties involved, as far as you can see?
Well, we're 23 years into this century, Greg, and I knew this topic was going to come up today. So I had a look. The title of Minister Housing in a Ministerial Portfolio has been in existence for the last 22 years, either as a piecemeal add-on in the form of, you know, Minister for the Environment, Local Government and Housing, or Minister for the Environment and Housing, or there's been a junior minister. And I think it's been after the 2011 government from then onwards that there was a full portfolio giving over to a Minister for Housing around the Cabinet table. Now, that's a good part of 10 years that we've had a very clear focus, and a 20 years with some form of a focus. But can anybody say with any honesty, Greg, that whatever the government have been doing over the last 10 years or the last 12 years is working? Because it clearly hasn't. And the worrying thing about, I suppose, about all of this is that the best way to predict the future, Greg, is to have a look at the past. And if what we have, the government has done over the last 10 years hasn't worked, and hasn't worked spectacularly poorly, I think thing augurs very poorly. My son and his girlfriend were in a visit to America in the tail end of last year, and they visited friends in California. And they were staying in a town or a city called San Jose, you may have heard it. And one of the things was the friends that they were staying with in a very small apartment, it cost $4,000 a month for that. As a result of that, there was very high levels of homelessness in San Jose. And the unfortunate thing about it was that it was very, very visible. We have homelessness in Donegal, but it's not as visible as it is in Dublin. But in San Jose, it was not unusual to see people sleeping in tents, sleeping on park benches and sleeping in doorways. But he said that the really sad thing about what he said was that in one way, while it was highly visible, in many other ways, it was completely invisible. That there was people walking by people. It was actually an accepted norm that because of the availability of property and because some people weren't able to provide for themselves, well, that was life. You're not going to agree with me, Greg, that we've already accepted that it's okay to wait 14 hours in an ED department up and down the country to get a service. We've already accepted in this country that it's 5 years, that it's okay to wait 5 years for a hip operation. Why would we not slowly but surely morph into a situation where we're going to accept this? We shouldn't, but we will, because in 2 weeks' time, Greg, we're going to be talking about something else.
But Paddy, and I know exactly what you're talking about, and you're right, and that's the way things move forward. But I suppose when you have the leader of the government saying that what we are about to do will lead to more homelessness, when we have, you know, multiple, many vacant properties, and, you know, it is accepted then, obviously, because if you've got the leader of a government that can say we are about to make a decision that will lead to more homelessness, it's inevitable. Sure. That is an acceptance. It's acceptance at the very, very top.
You see,
I know that's not quite the acceptance
I get your point. What the government are trying to do and have been consistently doing over the last 10 to 15 years is they want the market to solve this problem. The market can't solve it. Any interventions that the government have been taking in the market over the last 10 years, most of it has been on the demand side. And what I'm talking about here is that there is a generous grants to people who are first-time house buyers. The problem with that, though, is that you're bringing more people into the market and you're driving the price up. The HAP scheme for people that are renting means that more people can rent, driving up the price of rent. You have the shared equity scheme. You know, I can get a mortgage of 280,000. The government will take 80,000 equity in my house. Hey, presto, I can now bid for a house for 360. All of those measures are driving up the price of either rental properties or sale properties, for the simple reason is the problem is with supply, not with demand. And I can see that I know what the government are trying to do here, but, you know, I've looked at a lot of current affairs programs on the national broadcasters this last few days, but no government representative is saying where their research or where their ideas are coming from that ending the eviction order will mean that more properties will come in on the market. Where is the evidence?
Well, you see, the funny thing is that you should say that, because I couldn't understand why that wasn't being questioned, because I was listening to an interview yesterday. Was it Pippa Hackett was on National Radio, and she was saying it's not really our decision. We've received advice. We've been told that this is the right way. Who is telling them that? Who is advising them of that? I'll come back to you, of course. Seamus McDade, sure. You know, like, the solutions are there, unpalatable for some. We heard yesterday from Independent Thomas Pringle. It was simple. Tax the people out of the Airbnb market at 50, 60% tax. Give massive tax breaks to those in the rental, long-term rentals. So rather than them paying 50-odd percent for long-term rents, bring it down to maybe a 5% or no percent. And then at the same time, tax the people who are using these properties for Airbnb out of it so that it's not worth it for them. That would be it's bound to make more rental properties available. So the solutions are there. Why aren't the government, Seamus, acting on them?
Yeah, it's very difficult to kind of understand, Craig. And I think that, you know, any solution, like the solutions that that Deputy Pringle put forward there, there's logic behind them, and I can see why they would be worth trialing. And the government seem to be just continuing to do the same thing over and over again and obviously getting the same results. So it's a real lack of leadership from the government to try and trial a different strategy to see, can we get it out? Because, I mean, Patrick has said it very well there. It is, they have a thought that the market would fix this problem. And ultimately, the market won't fix the problem, because if I'm a property developer, high property prices are what I want. So keeping the property market high, not oversupplying the market, is exactly what I would like to do, because that would keep the prices high. So the market's never going to really fix this problem. The government needs to intervene. And they're choosing to just sort of nibble around the edges of this problem and not really get into it. So, yeah, the concept of maybe we do something drastic like that, like overtax Airbnbs or...
Well, there is, as of today, there are, and just flicking through them, these are regular houses. They're your 2-3-bedroom bungalows and what have you. There are 695 beautiful properties available for you to book in Airbnb tonight. These aren't rooms in someone's houses. These are individual properties. This is in Donegal, 694. And yet in
we do live in an area that is heavily dependent on tourism. And to have tourism, you're going to need places for the tourists to stay. So I don't think we can sort of vilify Airbnb.
I'm not vilifying them, but I'm on about, I'm looking here at a small townhouse that I don't know how many tourists are going to be in these houses this evening. As I say, all regular bungalows that like lots of us live in. You know, I mean, obviously there's a few sort of wooden buildings, but these are the housing stock. They are regular houses. These aren't, you know, apartments overlooking Downing's Bay. Do you know what I mean? These are regular houses in every corner of the county.
Well, I guess I would. Well, I guess what I would say too is sort of, why is the person who owns that house, why are they thinking they're financially better off to Airbnb it? The government have not also said, well, let's give tax breaks to small landlords to encourage them to stay in this market. I mean, the eviction ban, you can probably look, I would look at it similar to how we'd look at lockdowns. The idea behind it being a temporary measure to try and come up with a longer term solution. The government have brought in this and done absolutely nothing in the same way as they did with the lockdowns. They've done absolutely nothing to fix it. So therefore, the only thing they can do is keep the eviction ban in place longer term, because they're choosing, for whatever reason, to not try and solve this crisis.
Michael McLafferty, what do you think?
Look, Greg, what I think at the minute, just alluding to what the two speakers are saying there, the whole situation, the government has to come out here and lead by example here. The example's not been led here at the moment. We're clearly in a horrible, terrible situation for so many people at the moment. God knows what's going to happen now when April comes around, when all these cases start to come forward and evicting people and so on. Like, we can talk and talk about it all the day and put all our solutions forward, as my two speakers have there on the panel there, what they think should be going forward. But I feel myself, unless the government of the day, the leaders of the day, unless they're going to come out right and with proper solutions, we're just going to be talking the same thing this time next year. Only thing, this time next year is going to be a hell of a lot worse.
Yeah, but that being said, the importance of conversation is the general population get to have their say, and hopefully eventually the government has to hear that. I mean, we are heading towards a general election. This is probably one of the big issues an election will be fought on. So we can't sit in our hands and not talk about it. We have to talk about it. And also to, you know, we all have to have our views on it, Michael. What is your view? What do you believe a reasonable solution to this crisis would be in your own county?
I would say a reasonable solution would be, first of all, like you're saying there, and we're suggesting neither we sit in our hands and don't talk about it. But what I am saying is the government of the day are not listening to us. We see this in many aspects. We email ministers, we email officers and different things. Some of them get back when it suits, some of them don't get back at all. And there's no getting away from this situation now, this last, whatever is now, 10 years or so or longer now, since the whole situation arrived here with the making and the zones, since it all come to the forefront. They're not helping, like those people down in the zone, or like any various other place now that have made it, as well as the people that are going to end up in evictions now going forward. They need to get houses for one reason or another, and that is not coming forward. And it's not helpful when we're trying to get answers off the people in power and they're not coming out then giving answers for it. I think myself, they're just kicking the can down the road, Greg, hoping that they're going to push it off for another while.
I know, but I recognise you were observing the problem, and I think lots of people can see that too. But, you know, you are elected representative in the local authority. Do you believe the local authority has a role? If you do, what do you believe that role is, for example?
I believe the local authority's role is taking a strong stance on matters and holding these people accountable, and where possible, as we've asked for different times, get these ministers, if they get them into the room in Lifford or elsewhere, and say what's going on, why can they not do things, or so on. Like, going up to the Doyle in Dublin, as such, where I wasn't able to get the last of the mega protesters up, there doesn't seem to come anything out of it, like. And this is the thing, the point I'm saying here is, Greg, the leaders in Dublin are simply not listening to us.
Okay.
They may come out surely and shake hands with you and talk to you for 5 minutes, whatever, pass themselves and away again. But once you go in the bus or in the car down the road again, it's bye-bye, and that's it to the next time again, to the issue arises again, or the next protest, or whatever the case may be.
Okay.
And it's a sad state of affairs for us here in Ireland, Greg.
Paddy, when I sort of started going down the Airbnb route and taxation and what have you, I'm not sure if you were shaking your head or nodding, or I mean, like, there is another thing going on here, in that people own these houses. This is private property at the same time too. And how comfortable is the general population with, you know, the government's, some would say, overreach in this area between short-term and long-term rentals? But do you believe something like tax breaks for long-term renting, heavy taxation for Airbnb is a solution to at least free up some of those 695 houses in Donegal, for example?
Well, now you're getting to the nub of it, Greg, because the constitution of this country protects private ownership of property. I'm sitting in my own private house here and I can do whatever I like with it. And the government are constantly putting forward this mantra about the fact that, you know, private ownership is guaranteed in the constitution and there's only so far they can do. Michael is after saying there about the government is not listening. Well, actually, I would disagree with that. The government is listening, but they're listening to different people. God only knows what's going on behind the scenes in relation to how public policy is made. Remember, property developers and landlords are well represented in Dáil Éireann, and those two groups, I suspect, are well able to purchase high-powered lobbyists, and quite often these are former politicians who know what doors to knock on and what buttons to press and so on, whereas people on low incomes can't afford to do that. So there's a completely unequal balance here. I mean, there's a lot of things I find upsetting about this. I'm not avoiding your bit about the tax and all that because I don't know the ramifications of all of that. But the whole way that Jed Nash of the Labour Party made a good comment, was it yesterday in the Dáil, about the fact that the government, they knew that they were going to be short, so they had to go to the rural independent TDs. And he wants a list of all the goodies that the government gave out to those five rural TDs in order to vote for them. Now, the official stance from the government is there was nothing given. But I can see Dennis Nocton was like a rooster in full plume on the TV, very proud of himself, what he had got for Roscommon to vote. And the real horrible thing on top of horrible about this is the sum of the stuff that the government have actually conceded. And there's division now within the government over this. And this is about the fact that elderly people who are living in their home, who find themselves in residential care, that they can rent their property and the money will not be charged towards the Fair Deal scheme. Now, Age Action Ireland, a representative from that organisation, was on the news last night and she put forward a very, very strong case why that should not be done, because it would encourage the premature admission of elderly people into residential care, and the fact that families being families, and that there may be issue about, you know, elder abuse or financial abuse.
Coercion.
Is that money now, a thousand a month, is 12,000 a year. Mm. That's going into the elderly person's estate. And hey presto, it's the family members who are going to get that. And that seems to me like really, really dangerous policy without, it was decided on in 5 minutes and it just, It's really poor form.
It really is worrying. And what you mentioned about the buying the independents, I want to talk about that separately after a break. But I want to put it to you, Seamus, if that's all right, because you kind of took the worm as it relates to taxation, you know, and taxing people out of Airbnb and taxing the tax incentives for rental. In other words, trying to coerce people to do with what the government wants with their private property. Like, how far is it down the line then, Seamus, if we do go down that road, that you're living in your house, let's just say it was a 5-bedroomed house, your family have flown the nest and it's just you and your partner, and the government says, right, we're going to put a tax on you because there's 3 or 4 bedrooms that aren't being used all the while. Do you know what I mean? It's not a huge leap necessarily to go down that route, you know. So in other words, you know, is your own private home actually your own private home anymore?
Well, truthfully, Greg, in a normal functioning housing society, you should be leaving that house anyway, because in other societies where there's full stock of housing, a family would, you know, there would be empty nesters, and then that older couple would then move to a smaller apartment and that house would become available for a young couple. That's how it works in a normal situation. It's the supply issue here. And I think that I'm not sure that long term, I wouldn't support heavy taxes on Airbnb. But we're in a crisis, and nobody in government is suggesting any radical solutions for a temporary problem, which is what the high tax or on Airbnbs or high tax breaks, or even a suspension of the draconian planning laws we have here. So we can all, the local authorities can say all they want, oh, well, this is a central power problem. But there is very difficult processes to go through to apply for planning permission. Mm. None of that is changing. And I don't really see anybody in opposition proposing anything that will radically change this problem either. So this problem will be fixed whenever the supply matches the demand, which may take 10 years, may take 20 years. But without doing anything radical...
It might take longer than that, though, because our population is growing and there's lots of people that are coming to this country that will want to stay here. So we are actually... What's happening is that the demand is going to be far outstripping the supply for a long time to come, unless there are... We deliver housing in a quicker, different type of way. And there's no other, you know, unless they're hoping that enough people emigrate, that there's empty.
No, but I mean, the concept that we couldn't build, you know, we have a target of 30,000 houses a year that we can't even hit. But if we could get 1 year of 70,000 houses, we might have cleared a lot of the backlog of this. I would like somebody in government or in opposition to say, here's my plan to build a massive number of houses to get us out of this crisis. Nobody is really tackling that. Mm. We need a massive supply of housing here, right. And it's a very simple crisis to fix. Just build more houses.
All right, Paddy, did you want to come back in there before
I did. I wanted to say two things on that. One is that Larkin Sir, a lecturer on housing in the DIT in Dublin, said last year that there's actually, if you look at all the vacant properties, and he's not even talking about derelict properties, but the vacant properties, and he's really talking about Dublin and the environs, but I think you can apply this logic around the country, that if you look at all the vacant properties and all the properties where there might be a single person living in a 4 or 5 bedroom house.
No, you're there. Sorry. Yes, I can. There was just a little bit of a glitch, but keep going.
Oh, there. Oh, sorry. I thought it was down. There's actually, so with all the properties that are vacant and with all of the people, you know, single people living in 4 and 5 bedrooms house, there is actually enough property there. There is actually enough accommodation there for everybody, if you wanted to look at it that way. And second point is that the government are making the claims about all the houses that they're going to build. Kieran O'Donnell, the junior minister, said on TV last night that they were going to build 30,000 houses this year. The problem with it, though, is that it's no point saying that building houses in Letterkenny and Tralee are going to fix the housing problem in Dublin, because the houses have, the accommodation has to be put where the need is greatest. I mean, I'm after reading an article in the Irish Independent this morning where there was an application by a property developer for 1,200 units not far from the airport in Dublin, and on board Planalto turned it down. I mean, Dublin, the planning department in Dublin County Council and Board Planalto are tossing down planning applications in Dublin at a rate of knots. How are we ever going to achieve this when we have that? Maybe that's the right thing to do. We don't want to go back to a situation where we have 1960s Ballyfermots all over again and stuff like that. But trying to get something done and available in the right place where it needs to be is really, really difficult.
And Michael McClafferty, just before the break, I suppose we see that here in Donegal, because, you know, you need the right houses in the right place. And even on such a small scale here, we have, the last set of figures I looked at, I think it was for 2019 or 2020, 1/3 of social housing being offered is refused.
Yeah, Greg, you're right. There's no getting away from it. That is a problem. It is an issue, all right, for the people that wish or choose not to take the house when it's offered to them. That's a matter for the people in question themselves. I suppose going forward, the other problem we have here in this country.
Well, is it a matter for the people? Should people be allowed to refuse property like that and stay on the housing waiting list just because it might not be in the right place, or it might not have storage for a motorbike, or there's lots of... And I mean, of course, then there are the reasons why, well, people don't want to move their children from one school to another. But in a housing crisis, should someone be able to refuse a house from Donegal County Council and remain in situ on the housing waiting list?
Well, Greg, I stand by my point. It doesn't matter for themselves, to be honest. It is their choice, because we don't know what their circumstances are. For example, you could have a single person, you could have a mother, a child with some children. She may not be able to drive. or circumstances. There could be difficulties with schools. You don't know. Like, it's all very well saying no, put them off the list, but we don't know.
No, I never said that. I'm just, you know, I'm just saying it, we are in an absolute crisis here, and such high level of refusals of social housing for whatever reason. I presume you're on a housing waiting list if you're desperate for housing.
Well, the point, you are, Greg. Yes, of course you are. But the point I'm saying is, even if a person does refuse a house for whatever reason, and look, I come back to the idea, it's down to circumstances. And some of these circumstances can be very sensitive as well, without going into details, as any councillor knows, or anybody involved in public life knows, depending. But the thing is as well, if I refuse a house, you refuse a house, Greg, it's not the end of the world, because there's 10 more waiting in that house anyway.
All right, okay.
So I suppose in a way, it's a bit like a Rubik's Cube as such. It is always revolving, but the house is never lost. The house, somebody gets the house, because unfortunately there's that great in Eden, Donegal. The house is never lost. And I suppose back to the point was made there earlier as well with building houses. We have a real problem in this county, in many counties, and including the whole country as such. Our young people, our young skilled people, they're all heading away. So even if somebody did come up with an idea tomorrow morning, government build so many thousand houses, we may or may not have the skill force there to do it, and the workforce
And I have you here, as I say, just, and then we'll take a break. I mean, part of the problem too is in talking about bringing vacant properties back into use. You know, a lot of these properties, like the government have set regulations and standards to which houses must be brought up to, right? And I mean, I think a lot of these vacant houses that are being counted and we say, right, let's bring them up to scratch, probably aren't financially viable or incredibly expensive to do so because of the rigorous standards in terms of energy saving and all that type of stuff that they have to be brought up to. Could that be part of the is that a major problem with part of the solution, Seamus, for example?
I think we need to probably like really try and be very clear on what the definition of a vacant property is, because there's, if you drove around Remelton, there is plenty of derelict buildings, but they're not vacant as such. So there's no real chance that they could be brought back into use without substantial.
Like there's a shed next to, there's a shed close to where I live that has an air code. Is that classed as a vacant property, I wonder?
Yeah, that's what I would wonder too, because I actually can't say that I know of many vacant I don't think I know of any vacant properties, and the vast majority in our county of vacant properties.
But there's 700 vacant properties in Airbnb tonight, Seamus.
Well, Airbnb is and there will be others that are holiday homes. But again, we are a county that relies on our tourism, so we're going to need holiday homes and Airbnbs as well. However, I do accept that we are in a crisis, and a crisis calls for a certain actions, and that may be a short-term solution to the problem. I hear figures for vacant properties all the time that I wonder, are they at where the metric of that is?
Yep. All right, then, listen, thank you very much indeed. That's the voice there of Seamus McDade. He's the MD at McDade's Football Special. We're hearing from Independent Councillor Michael McClafty and Paddy Rooney, PRO of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital. More from them and your views as well, wherever you're listening to today, coming into us after these. Just a quick one on the vote yesterday. We'll start with you, Michael, if that's all right. I mean, if you were an independent TD, would you be bored? Could you, if you got, say, for instance, Dunfanaghy Medical Centre fast-tracked to build, would that be enough for you to back the government on a vote on ending no-fault evictions?
Well, Greg, first of all, it would be a sad state of affairs if that carriage is waved to me, to be quite honest. But
that's what's happening. That's what these independents do.
Some may, but not all of us do. I go back to the point again, it'd be a sad state of affairs that has happened up.
Yep, go ahead. We're hearing you loud and clear.
So it's a sad state of affairs what has happened, obviously, what the independents over the last few days, because clearly they're not really independent at all when they're so easily bought. And secondly, then, the health centres of Stanston and Fanny, we're nowhere further forward with that at the moment. But that's
it was just an example. I mean, like, if they said, look, back us on this and we'll make sure, you know, the diggers are on site in 6 months, could you say no to that?
I would say no to it, Greg, yes, because I couldn't say yes to one thing, much and all as I wanted, much and all as people in the Fanny wanted, but I couldn't say yes to something just basically like to get a backhand to get it and And on the other hand, then so many thousands more people suffering. I couldn't let myself do that. My heart wouldn't allow me, Greg, to be quite honest with you.
What about you, Seamus? Could you do it? Or do you think at the very least, us as the taxpayers, and we're often reminded when the government's spending that we are the taxpayers, that we should know what deals were done to secure votes? What deals will have to be done next week as well, by the way? And how much is it costing us?
Yeah, well, it should definitely be public knowledge what deals are done. I think, to be fair, if you vote independent, you are probably voting with local issues sort of right at the core. So I think if you're an independent voter and your independent TD goes and does a deal that gets something good for your constituency, you're probably happy enough with that. And I think independent TDs, that's kind of their bread and butter. That's what they do. They give their support around in return for things for their constituency. And I don't have a problem with it, except for that it's not public knowledge. I mean, it's ridiculous that it wouldn't be public, that it's not public knowledge. But I don't have an actual problem with them doing that.
Paddy?
I mean, at a certain point in time...
Sorry, go ahead, yep. No, continue your point. Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you, Greg. At a certain point in time, that's, you know, I mean, in all levels of power, I mean, that's what the DUP tried to do with the Brexit vote. They tried to say, we have some votes here. We'll give it if you give us a good deal. Going way back to Home Rule, the Irish Parliamentary Party tried to use it. I mean, this is the balance of power. If independents hold the balance of power, this is what they do.
Yeah, but that's. I mean, do we not need to move away from that type of politics, though? Like, that acceptance is depressing.
Well, not if you're like your suggestion you said, not if the locality, not if that's what it takes for... I mean, again, it's crazy that that's what it would maybe take for some of these TDs to get things in their constituencies. And we need maybe some sort of decentralised government that they wouldn't be able to do all these deals. But at the current climate, current system that we live in, this is a good way for independents to manipulate the system.
Right. Okay. Well, yeah, it is, because it works, I suppose, whether you like it or not, Paddy.
Well, I don't like it, Greg, and I think it's an awful way to do business, because when people are elected to Dáil Éireann, they're there to work in the public interest, not in the local interest. I can see why they would. The first time that this ever became a big issue, I suppose, was when Tony Gregory was, he announced the deal that he got for inner city development from Charlie Haughey to get his nomination for Taoiseach. And we had, you know, Jared Cunningham's book about the Morris Tribunal and how the funding for the Harry Blaney Bridge come around. Mark McSharry about cardiac services in Sligo, the Garda station in Stepaside, and so on and so forth. But putting a Garda station in Stepaside, perhaps we would like the Garda station in Milford to be retained. What good is the Garda station in Stepaside to us? I mean, there's no equity or fairness in all of that. And all of that is just about sort of the government, you know, trying to maintain power. And that's just no way at all to run a government, as far as I can see. I mean, if Mark McSharry's vote was very important for the government and the vote of confidence, Sligo gets cardiac services, Letterkenny, because they don't have an independent in that position, don't get it. I mean, that's just no way to run a country or run a health service, as far as I can see.
And at the very least...
I can imagine why they're doing it, Greg.
Yeah, and also, too, the reason why it's not made public is because that would pull back the curtain and we would see it all. We accept it because it happens behind closed doors. But if we were to be told what is being agreed and how much it's being costed, and to what extent, like, say, for instance, a project gets bumped up the list, people in other areas that are bumped down the list have a right to know that that happened and for what reason. And absolutely. I think the public should be demanding this.
Yeah, can I just make the point here? The two Healy-Ray brothers both voted on opposite sides yesterday, as far as I know. Michael Healy-Ray voted against the abolition of the ban, and Danny Healy-Ray voted for it. Danny was one of the five TDs that voted for it. Now, what do you think went on there? Do you think that he didn't do the popular thing and vote against the ban? He got something for it, but it's not out there in the public arena, and that's no way to do a public administration, as far as I can see.
Right. So, but Seamus, you still see some merit in it. I mean, if it delivers for the local region, I think we have Michael and Paddy kind of in the same space. I mean, and simply because it is in our area, like the likes of Thomas Pringle did decline to back government for a bit of, you know, a bit of good news for his region. Yeah, and he subscribes to the same view that that Paddy does, that he's elected to represent the country, not his constituency. I don't think I'm misquoting him in that.
Yeah, and I'm not saying you should definitely accept the deal. Like, you have to go with your conscience. But the system is set up in a certain way right now, and they are using the system. I don't think the system should be set up like this, but it is set up like this, and I don't really have a problem, because it's one of them things. Everybody loves to give out about the Healy Rays giving it, but if Donegal TDs were getting it, we'd be quite happy. So when it's not happening, when it's happening in your constituency, you're quite happy with it. When it happens in your constituency, you give out about it.
Right, okay. EU leaders agreed last night to jointly purchase 1 million artillery shells and send them to Ukraine over the next year, as Taoiseach Leo Varadkar warned that appeasement has failed and Putin will stop where we stop him. That's the words from Leo Varadkar. But then senior officials have said, however, that Ireland would not contribute to military aid to Ukraine, and the agreed conclusions of the EU leaders at the Brussels summit specified that the decision to send artillery shells was without prejudice to the specific character of the security and defence policies of certain member states. Can we ride two horses like that? You've got, I mean, Leo Varadkar effectively saying on our behalf now, when he speaks, whether people like it or not, whether you voted for him or not, he says appeasement has failed. Putin will stop where we stop him. Are you happy enough with that kind of language on your behalf being spoken, Michael?
100% not, Greg. Leo Varadkar should not have put that point across on the people of Ireland's behalf, because it's not that long. It was only a couple of weeks ago or more where I believe Leo Varadkar said, I do believe it was thought, that they were, Ireland was going to help and help the situation, all right, but there's more kind of medical ways and stuff like that, sending stuff like that. That's the way they were going to help on, but I don't see now why the U-turn and they're sending, going to support now buying a million shells.
But we're not going to support that, right? But we are training soldiers to fight on the ground. Let's not forget that, or we're sending people to train them. But well,
we are supporting, Greg. Yes, yeah. We are supporting. I'll tell you why we're supporting. Once these F-16s and fighter jets and MiGs and everything else and tanks off the bay, all these various names that we never heard tell of before, are landing a ship to Ukraine at the minute. Some of them are there, more coming. Once that all starts, and once America gets involved, and America will get involved, Britain will get involved, France will get involved, all other countries will get involved. And the moment America gets involved, Greg, we will not be neutral. Because no doubt again, Ireland will have to go backing up again then, as such, let it be political support, whatever the case may be. Our Irish government cannot sit silent and just sit back and say, okay, boys, share what's going on. That's not going to happen. We all know that. And it's not good for ourselves either. And it's definitely not good when our leaders are speaking on behalf of the people of Ireland without any consultation. Nobody wants this war no more than the poor Ukrainians themselves that are stuck in the middle of it. And indeed the Russians as well, on the other side, that have been forced into it. And both sides now forced into the front line. It's a holy mess, just that's all it is, no more than these other countries as well. That's had it for years and years to no resolve. Yeah. And I don't think the way this is going either. This is just heading down to another, what would you say, a Vietnam or something like it, along the same lines again.
Paddy, appeasement has failed and Putin will stop where we stop him. Are you comfortable with Leo Varadkar's language on your behalf?
Look, everybody, we need to wise up here. There is a proxy world war being fought here. Are people watching about what?
Well, it's a year Iran since we. It's and, a year and, since we had that conversation, and that's how, as it was called out on this item, and it was yourself it and myself that and talked about that.
It is, and it's actually it is. You're correct, and it's actually getting worse if people are following, because arch enemies Saudi Arabia and Iran have signed a deal, or signed an agreement to let bygones be bygones, and China, is the honest broker that brokered that deal. China is now going to accept the new pipelines being oil lines from Russia to China, and China is going to give Russia military equipment in exchange for that. So the ante is going to be up all the time. We had in the Second World War, for instance, Ireland was de facto neutral, but in practice they weren't neutral. And Damon de Valera, who was the Taoiseach at the time, was happy enough to turn a blind eye to it. I mean, we were using down the West Coast all the weather stations and observation posts and all that. We're giving the Americans and the British military what's the word, intel on sea and air traffic movement and also on climate change. Because Eisenhower, when he decided to hop the ships across the English Channel on the 6th of June, 1944, remember it was the weather station in Blacksod Bay in Mayo was the last thing that they spoke to before he pressed the button to give the go. So we were officially neutral there, but we weren't in practice neutral.
No, of course, and then we have the use
of
Shannon.
If there was any Germans or anything happened, yep. they were arrested.
Not to mention the
fact they have the British and Americans, they were all handed back.
Yeah, so and we had the corridor.
We weren't neutral then either.
No, with the corridor. We had the corridor for the bombers leaving Enniskillen, heading out to across Finnecamp. We, during that horrible invasion of Iraq, Shannon was available to them. So to that point, then,
and make the point that I mean, this gets murkier about prisoners of war, whatever they called from Iraq, that were going to Guantanamo Bay. Some of those airplanes, a lot of them went through Shannon Airport. So the point I'm making here is this is not new, right? We are officially neutral, but in practice, we are involved at a low level so far. I mean, the size of this country, we can't do anything to really change materially anyway. But there will come a point of time here that we're going to have to stick our colours to some mast, either with, you know, we're either with Western democracy and we're with the European Union and with the Americans, or we're with the Russians. It's going to get very black and white here. Because Leo Varadkar, I have to say, is right. If, for instance, Vladimir Putin gets his way in Ukraine, Poland are very, very worried that they're going to be next. They're ramping up their military as we speak and preparing for that day. You know that.
Yeah, and Seamus, too, the problem is that it's not in anyone's interest for this war to end anytime soon. You know, the world's boundaries are being redrawn. This is all working, I think, very well for the Chinese as well, and it's probably no surprise to see that recent visit, and almost also to see Putin subservient to the Chinese leader. The Americans obviously would have their motivations, the British as well. This is going to drag on, and all the while, thousands of people dying over what? There's thousands of people dying over a destroyed city. The city is destroyed. But where does this all end, Seamus, do you think? Like, I mean, it's incredibly worrying. I mean, we get used to it, but if you allow yourself to think about actually what's going on for a moment and how this is what's happening on a worldwide scale, this is going to take quite some time to figure out.
It's an incredibly complex situation. I would say, Greg, that the one group of people who definitely want this war to end quickly is the poor Ukrainians and the 6 million Ukrainians who've had to leave their home country because a foreign army has decided to invade there. You know, I think that Patrick summed it up very well there, that, you know, Irish neutrality is a cod and is just a cloak to not invest in our defence forces. But at the same time, Michael also made a very good point in that we are officially a neutral nation. And our Taoiseach is now just deciding that he's going to send artillery, you know, he's going to fund artillery shells. So he needs to take that back to the people to say, do we not want to be neutral anymore? Do we want to be on this side? I would support that strategy, but he can't just decide mid-government cycle that we're now going to fund these things. In terms of where this whole war ends, it's very, very complex. I mean, there's an awful lot going on here, and I don't know where it ends. But as I say, your only sympathy should be with the poor people of these cities that have been razed to the ground by a foreign army. And they and these poor people who we have all over the country who do not want to be in Ireland because they want to be in the Ukraine but can't be there because Vladimir Putin has decided he's going to invade there.
Mm. Michael, do you want a last word on this before a quick break?
I think both speakers are right there. I just sad state of affairs. And look, at the end of the day, people are making a fortune out of this. The military crowd and ammunition and everything else. And unfortunately, people on both sides are suffering, being killed, innocent people, young people, middle age, everything. For what? Like, for people to gain power. And it's just the world greed again is causing the whole problem.
See, maybe I'm quite naive, but I thought countries like ours that are neutral or purportedly neutral use that position by way of becoming a peacemaker, especially when we have this much heralded peace that was reached on this island. But that's am I being naive and stupid on that?
I wouldn't say that you are, Greg, either way, but what I would say is my own personal point of view, what is it, March 2002, when the first fighter jets from America landed in Shannon Airport, we lost our neutrality that day, to be honest with you, in my personal point of view, because once they land there to refuel, we're aiding and abetting a war, whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
Irish people may not be particularly out fighting it, but we are still aiding and abetting it, helping those planes get fueled and refueled. So I think we've lost at that time. And just to remind people as well, we don't need reminding, but we had the Russian ships here, mine was around this time last year, up around Dublin, off the Irish coast, sorry. So, like, what were they doing there? What were they eyeing up? Who knows where the submarines are about? We need to be very, very careful. We're a small island here. We need to be very careful what's going on here, what's been said and what's not been said with our leadership. I just feel that, Greg.
He's in the last couple of minutes. Seamus, should we put the clocks forward this weekend, or should we stop meddling with that malarkey?
I never really understand the argument either way on it. Like, it's kind of
just
like,
pure indifference.
How is it still a thing? And also, but why should it not still be a thing? So okay. I never really get why people get so worked up about it.
Paddy, what do you think? Should we put the clocks forward, put them back, leave them where they're at?
No, put them forward and leave them forward.
Yeah.
Because the reason why it was put in place was because of, I think, children's school, agriculture, all that kind of stuff. Not relevant anymore. Put them forward and leave them be.
Go on. That's it. I'm on Team Paddy on this one. What do you think, Michael?
I'm okay either way, to be honest with you.
Oh, come on. Get off the fence.
I'm okay. It doesn't matter to me whether it's forward or back. There's nothing else there for most of us anyway, so it makes no difference to me. We're up anyway, so...
Michael is waiting for a deal to decide which side he's going to
go. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, Miss and Michael, thanks for your very valuable hour this morning. Anyway, I can't give you that back, but we do appreciate your time. Thank you very much indeed. It's been good to have you on the program. Paddy, as always, thank you very much indeed. Have a lovely weekend, please. And last but not least, of course, Seamus McDade. Have a good one, Seamus. Thanks for joining in, and thanks for your views. Very much appreciated.
Thanks, Greg.
All right, take care of yourself. That's Paddy Rooney, Seamus McDade, Michael McClafferty. That was our Friday panel, running through some of the old big stories of the day. Lots of you texting in, by the way.